Before I get into today's episode, I have some news. If you're not already aware, in this series I have been running an adventure I wrote myself called The Palace of Evander. Now, I've been meaning to do this for some time now, but finally I have. I've compiled all my notes into a reasonably presentable module and published it on DryThruRPG as a pay what you want PDF. The Palace of Evander is a basic adventure module that can be run using BX, BECME rules or an equivalent OSR rule set such as Dark Dungeons, White Box, Swords and Wizardry, Basic Fantasy or the like with very minimal conversion. This adventure can be played in a single session with a party of 3 to 6 characters of level 1 to 3, so is also ideal for introducing new players to an older system. Feel free to take a look at your discretion. Perhaps your players might unravel the mystery of the Palace of Evander. Who knows? I'll put a link to the store page below. Before I get back into the adventure, as Ilyena and Cathbad have both been reincarnated, their physical appearance will be altered. I randomly rolled up their new appearance, basing the options available on the write-up of Traladarans, Thiashans and mixed races in the Gazetteer for the Grand Duchy of Karamikos. Ilyena, who is of mixed Traladaran and Thiashan heritage, had dark blonde hair, which has now changed to dark brown, and her eyes, once deep blue, have become black. Cathbad, a Traladaran, on the other hand, has not altered greatly. His complexion is still pale, his eyes still brown, as is the case with most Traladarans. The only change is that his hair has shifted from dark brown to black. So Cathbad, Ilyena and Yolanda are now facing this dryad who has lost her tree, so it's anybody's guess how long she might survive. So the first thing I'm going to do is roll initiative. And luckily the party win the initiative with a 6 versus a 4. So to be fair, I'm going to roll a d6 and the result of the d6 will determine how many rounds this dryad can last before she dies as a result of her tree being destroyed. So she's going to last the maximum possible amount of time, which was a 6 on the d6. It's not clear whether the party would know that the dryad cannot survive for long without their tree. So I will allow each of them to make an intelligence roll to determine if they do. Ilyena needs under 11 and Cathbad and Yolanda under 13. And I've rolled 3 14s on 3 d20s. What are the odds? So they all fail the intelligence check. The party will attempt to evade the dryad, escaping back into the throne room and attempting to shut and lock the door behind them. Therefore, the dryad must make a morale check to determine whether she will pursue the characters. She has a morale score of 6, so if I roll a 7 or above on 2d6, she will not pursue. Wow. double sixes, so 12. This dryad is definitely not going to pursue the characters. So the characters are able to escape the garden and close and lock the door behind them. The question now is whether the characters notice that within 60 seconds, which is 6 rounds, the dryad dies. I think a listen check is in order here to determine if anyone hears the dying screams of the dryad on the opposite side of the door. There will be a 1 in 6 chance for Ilyena and Cathbad, and a 2 in 6 chance for Yolanda. So Yolanda does hear something. So Yolanda hears the dryad die, unable to sustain her life without her precious tree. With the dryad dead and Evander's familiar gone, no obvious threat remains in the garden. So the party are now free to re-enter it and claim any treasure the dryad may have hidden at the base of her tree. There is also the opportunity for Ilyena and Cathbad to retrieve their equipment from their corpses. I'll allow Cathbad to roll against his intelligence to see if he can discern whether the enchantment about the place has perceivably left. If he succeeds, then he is confident that the place offers no immediate threat. Cathbad is looking for 13 or less on the d20. And with a 5, that is indeed a success. It is only at this moment that the realization hits each character. Ilyena and Cathbad are as naked as babes. Abashed, they instruct Yolanda to take them to their previous bodies so they can equip themselves. This takes 6 turns to accomplish. And then the party re-enter the mysterious garden once again. Dryads are known for hiding treasure in hollows at the base of their tree roots. I will allow intelligence rolls to see if any character might be aware of this knowledge. Ilyena needs under 11 and the other two under 13. It seems they have all heard these kinds of tales. With nothing suitable to dig, they are forced to improvise with daggers, swords, iron spikes, and practically anything sharp they can find to work the garden soil. It takes them 2 hours to find the cache buried below. The dryad is treasure type D, so I'm going to make the necessary rolls to see what she had stashed away in her tree. I didn't actually intend that to rhyme, but there you go. So there will be a 10% chance of 1d8,000 copper pieces. So there is no copper in the stash. There will be a 15% chance of 1d12,000 silver pieces. No silver pieces in the stash. There will be a 60% chance of 1d6,000 gold pieces. So there are 3,000 gold pieces in the treasure. There is a 30% chance of 1d8 gems. 8 gems. 30% chance of 1d8 jewellery. No jewellery. A measly 10% chance of 1d2 special treasure. No special treasure. And finally, a 15% chance of any two plus one potions. Ooh, I rolled a 14 on the percentile. So there are two plus one potions in the stash. Awesome. So I get to make 8 percentile rolls to find out the value of the gems. So I have a 68, which is a 1,000 gold piece carbuncle or opal. I'll go with carbuncle because I like the word. So a carbuncle in gemstone terms is another name for a deep red almandine gemstone that has been cut with a smooth convex face in a method called kubokan. Traditionally, the term referred to any red gemstone, most often a red garnet. Garnet is one of the other options in the table, though, so these are not red garnets. These are exclusively their own thing. A red carbuncle. Let's make another roll. Gemstone number 2. 98. So this is a special tristal or star stone. So I guess I'm going to roll a d6 to decide whether this is a star stone or a tristal. 1 to 3, star stone. 4 to 6, tristal. So we have a star stone. A star stone is any gem of 1,000 gold piece value or more, from carbuncle to jacinth, except for diamonds, may be found with a star-like formation in its centre. These are often called by their individual names, star ruby, star sapphire, etc., and are as a group called star stones. A star stone has twice the value of its normal gem type. So the easiest thing to do here without having to do the math is to roll the percentile on the gem value table again, but ignore any result that is less than a carbuncle or more than a jacinth. And I don't think that will cause too much trouble. So I rolled a 93. So that's either a diamond or a jacinth. And I'll use the trusty D6 to decide which. 1 to 3, diamond. 4 to 6, jacinth. It's a jacinth. I think it might be pronounced jacinth, not jacinth. Yeah. So at double the value, this jacinth is worth 20,000 gold pieces. This is an incredible treasure hoard. Roll number 3. 60 is a carbuncle again. Roll number 4. 75 is a 5,000 gold piece emerald, ruby, or sapphire. Let's go with ruby. And we're on to gem number 5. 15 is a 100 gold piece jade. Roll number 6. 30 is a 500 gold piece pearl. Gem number 7. 23 is another 100 gold piece jade. And finally, the last roll. 46 is another 500 gold piece pearl. So time to roll up the potions now. We have two potions that are both a plus one potion. I almost misinterpreted the text in the treasure table. It's not any two plus one potions. It's any magical items plus one potion. This is far more interesting. I get to make two rolls on the main magical item table to determine which categories of magic items are present. So here I go with the percentile die, or dice even. So a 32 is a magical scroll. And for the second roll, a 37 is another magical scroll. So let's find out what these two scrolls are. So on the percentile, I have a 73, which is a spell scroll. So I'll just roll again for the next scroll. 59, protection from undead. So for the spell scrolls, first I need to roll percentile to see what type of scroll it is. 21 is a magical scroll suitable for magic users. Now I need to roll for the spell level. 92 is a 7th level magic user spell scroll. Oh, I need to roll a d3 as well to find out how many spells are on the spell scroll. So 5 is 3 spells. So this scroll contains 3 spells. 1 is a 7th level spell, and I'll roll 2 more to determine the spell level for the other spells. 42 is a 2nd level spell, and finally 16 is a 1st level spell. So there is a 1st, 2nd and 7th level spell on this spell scroll. So in Bekmi, in order to determine what is on a spell scroll, the magic user needs to use a read magic spell to find out what's on the scroll. And in terms of me as the DM deciding what spells will be on that scroll, the advice in the rules cyclopedia is that these spell scrolls are a good way to introduce new spells in a campaign, and they may thus be designed with the character's current spell books in mind. So basically, I will maybe randomly determine, based on the spell levels, what the spell scrolls have on them, and perhaps I will ignore results for spells that Cathbad already has. But I'll make that decision at the point that Cathbad decides to use his read magic spell to read this scroll. So the final thing I need to do to finish off determining what's in this Dryad's treasure hoard is to roll for the potion to find out what the potion is. And a 2 is a potion of agility. So to recap, the treasure hoard contains 3,000 gold pieces, 8 gems, which are divided into 2 100 gold piece jades, 2 500 gold piece pearls, 2 1,000 gold piece carbuncles, a 5,000 gold piece ruby, a 20,000 gold piece star jacinth, 1 protection from undead scroll, 1 magical spell scroll containing a 1st, 2nd and 7th level spell, plus 1 potion of agility. That is an absolutely amazing treasure hoard. So we actually have a issue with encumbrance here, because this hoard, luckily, A lot of it is very expensive gems, but to take the whole thing away would cost over 3,000 CN in encumbrance. My calculations dictate that the party can carry out the entire hoard in 4 trips, and their mule, Bella, can bear the weight. 4 trips back and forth at their encumbered 60 feet per turn will mean it will take them 16 turns to load up their spoils. By the time the party finish loading out the treasure, it is the small hours, and dawn is not far away. On the return journey to Alabast, they will be reduced to 6 miles per day. It will take them 2.5 days at best to make it through the forest. However, despite having a map, the woods seem to play tricks on them, and so there is indeed a chance that they can become lost. I also need to bear in mind that Claudius's party are also currently travelling through Radleb Woods, so I'm going to handle these two parties a day at a time to make sure I don't run into any continuity errors. Claudius is currently a couple of hexes east of Ilyena's party, and Ilyena's party are moving south, away from them. I will make a roll on a d6 to see if they become lost on their first day of travel. They have a 2 in 6 chance. Luckily, they manage to move in the correct direction. There is also a 2 in 6 chance that the party will have a daytime encounter. And they do indeed have a daytime encounter. It's currently Gromdane 9, Felmont, in the year AC 1000. Ilyena and Yolanda's party are about to have a wilderness encounter in the woods, so I'm going to roll a d8 to determine the type of encounter they're going to have. And with a 5, they're going to have an unusual encounter. So I'm going to roll on the unusual subtable with a d12. A 7 is a lycanthrope werebore. So there's going to be 2d4 werebores according to their stat block. So 3 altogether. That's not too bad. As it is not a full moon, they will be in human form. So I'm going to make a surprise roll. So neither side are surprised. And I'm going to say that early in the morning, in the woods, the area will be dim light, so visibility will be affected a little bit, so the distance of the encounter will be 1d4 times 10 yards. So that's 40 yards. Let's go to initiative. So the party win the initiative with a 6 to a 1. There is absolutely no way that the party are going to want to stick around for this encounter. So they're going to naturally, with initiative, try to evade. So looking at the evasion table, the party size is 1 to 4. The number of monsters encountered is 2 to 3. So there is a base chance of 70% to evade. There is a plus 25 adjustment because we are in wooded terrain. However, the party are only moving at 60 feet per turn because they are quite heavily encumbered. So the pursuers are twice as fast. So that's going to reduce the adjustment chance down by 25, effectively cancelling the bonus for being in the woods. So that takes us back to a basic 70% chance of evasion. So let's roll the percentile and see if I can roll 70 or lower. And with an 83, the party are not going to evade so easily. So there's definitely some ambiguity in the rules here, because werebores have a morale of 9. However, when in human form, they fight as berserkers with a morale score of 12. So effectively, they fight to the death. However, if we look at this literally, the party are not in combat with the werebores at this moment. So I think I'm going to rule as the referee that they have a morale score of 9. So I'm going to roll a morale check to see if the werebores decide to pursue the evading party. So I'm going to roll 2d6 and I'm looking for above 9. And a 10 means that these werebores will not pursue the party. And again, there's a little more ambiguity with the way that evasion works. But I guess at a minimum, you have to say that the evasion lasted a round. Once the party have successfully evaded, they must regain their bearings. And the rule cyclopedia says that if the evaders do get away, they need to rest from their exertions, regain their bearings, that is, determine where they are now. For every round the chase lasted, the evaders moved at full running speed in directions chosen or assumed by the DM. So I think what would make sense would be for me to roll to determine a random direction. So I'm going to roll a d6, one being north and going clockwise from north to northwest. So d6 on a 1, the party are moving north, so they're moving further away from where they're heading, because Alabast is south, so they're essentially moving in the opposite direction. But here's the thing, they're only moving as far as they can in a single round, so they're not moving away an additional hex. I think the whole idea of this, and I'm quoting again from the rule cyclopedia, their attempts at evasion could have carried them deep into unknown territory, such as wilderness off the posted roads and trails or unexplored dungeon levels, and now the characters are lost. They'll have to explore their way back to the areas they know. But it also says if their movement carried them into areas they already knew or had mapped, then they are fine. So taking that at face value, the party are essentially free to carry on their journey as normal, having gotten away from the werebores. This brings them to daybreak on Cerdane, the 10th day of Felmont. I will now return to Claudius and party, who are about to have a nighttime encounter on the eighth day of Felmont. They are camped somewhere near the northern edge of the dense woodland. The rule cyclopedia says that it's the DM who chooses the watch. I'll roll D4 to determine who is on shift when the encounter occurs. One is Claudius. Two is Alexander. Three is Solana. And four is Revere. Claudius is currently on watch. So I'm going to roll a D8 to find out what is being encountered. An 8 is a dragon. So a D12 on the dragon subtable now. A 6 is a red dragon. So I'm going to check surprise. Nobody is surprised. Obviously, only one character was on watch at the time the encounter occurs. The rule cyclopedia says the DM looks at the situation and decides exactly what has happened, describing this to the players who must work within the limits of the situation. So first, let's determine the encounter distance. I will rule that currently visibility is no light, just a subtle campfire, which is enough to cover the immediate surroundings in dim light. That's all. So the encounter will be 1d4 times 10 yards. So the encounter will take place at 20 yards away. During his night watch, as the others are sound asleep, Claudius notices a large shape stalking the edge of his vision. The vegetation on the forest floor rustles violently as he shakes the others awake in a panic. Luckily, they make it to their feet and are alert the moment a very young red dragon emerges into the campfire light. The party wins the initiative. The party has a 50% chance to evade. And they roll a 50. So they are just about able to escape. Claudius kicks embers from the fire into the dragon's face, and the party escape into the darkness of the forest. They hear the dragon roar and take flight, but it does not come in pursuit. Lucky for them, as it is dark, I'm going to rule here that there is a 2 in 6 chance the party have lost their way. And indeed, they have lost their way. I'm going to allow Solana to make a roll against her wisdom to see if she can correct the party and bring them back on track. She is their guide because she knows the elven forests better than the others. So Solana needs a 10 or less to succeed. And with a 19, she fails. Solana is struggling to find the right direction to travel through the forest. The party will travel in a random direction, dictated by a D6. And a 2 means the party will travel northeast. It is daybreak on the 9th of Felmont when the party set out again. And there will be a 2 in 6 chance of an encounter. Luckily, there is no encounter in the daytime. So by nightfall, the party suddenly emerge into grasslands where they can see the lights of Riflion on the horizon to their right, about 15 to 20 miles away. The party noticed for the first time they must have gotten lost along the way. Their second problem is that they have now completely run out of rations, so they will be forced to forage along the way, which will reduce their speed to 2/3. It is 32 miles to Alabast, and the party are slowed to just over 5 miles per day. So they are currently about 6 days away at present. They camp and will set out again in the morning on Cerdain, the 10th day of Felmont. Claudius and his companions prepare to travel once again. They have a 50% chance to forage food for the day. And at 95 on the percentile, they will be forced to go a day with no food. They also have a 2-in-6 chance of a daytime encounter. And yes, with a 2, they will also have a daytime encounter. So I'm going to roll a d8 to find out what they encounter. So on a 1, that will be human. So a d12 now on the human subtable. So a 4 is a berserker. Regarding the encounter, I think there should be a chance that the berserkers are in their lair, which in their case would be a small barbarian village nestled in Radleb Woods. Beckmead D&D leaves these kinds of calls up to the DM. As I'm playing solo, I need to take this out of my hands, really. So the sensible option is to revert to the percent in lair mechanic found in the OD&D Monsters and Treasure book. So humans would typically be found in their lair 15% of the time. I'll say that if I do roll 15 or under on the percentile dice, then the berserkers are scouting the forest or perhaps hunting, and they may be able to lead the characters back to their village and supply them with food if the encounter is a positive one, which of course only the dice can decide. And with a 79, the berserkers are definitely not near their lair. Is anybody surprised? So nobody is surprised. So encounter distance will be 2d6 times 10 yards. So 70 yards. Let's roll for initiative. So the berserkers scored a 6 to the party's 4, so they win the initiative. So I'm going to do a random monster reaction roll for the berserkers to see how they react to the party. And with a 5, they are immediately aggressive.
Take one more step and we'll cut you in half,
one of the berserkers warns. We still need to determine their numbers. So there are 2 berserkers facing the party. The party will get a -4 to the next monster reaction roll. They could evade, but you know what? I think they can take them. And they're fed up of traipsing around the woods, getting lost. Claudius is going to fire a sling stone, and Alexander is going to shoot his short bow. They are firing from medium range. Alexander has a +1 missile fire bonus, so a 12 and 11 needed to hit. So one hit from the sling stone. This is only going to do 1d4 damage. 3 damage. They have one +1 hit dice. The berserker that was hit is immediately killed with the sling stone. The shot struck him clean on the temple. Claudius and Revere are in the front rank. The remaining berserker will use their running speed to cut to melee, but may not strike this round. Claudius and Revere can make their attacks. Claudius needs 12 and Revere 11 due to his +1 strength bonus. So with a 19 and a 14, they both land blows. The mace strikes 1 to 6 points of damage, and the warhammer 1 to 6. But with a +1 again for Revere's strength bonus, so that's 2d6 +1 damage in total. 3 damage, 4 damage in total. And the berserker has 9 hit points, so is reduced to 5. The berserker can now make their attack roll and will try to hit Revere. With a +2 against humanoids, the berserker only needs a 13 to hit. But a 9 is not good enough, fortunately. So we are back at initiative now. And the party win with a roll of 6 against 4. Alexander and Solana are going to spend the round moving through the trees into rare attack positions. Claudius and Revere can make 2 more attacks in the melee. Claudius needs 12 and Revere 11. Unfortunately, they completely miss with a pair of 6s. The berserker will attack Revere. Twelve is not quite good enough. Revere was literally saved by a single pip. Back to initiative. And the party beat a 4 with a 5. So I believe that Alexander can get his backstab in because he is standing behind the berserker. The rule cyclopedia says that when no battle is in progress, a backstab attempt may require a move silently ability check. Well, there is a battle in progress, so my interpretation of that is that a move silently ability check is not required. So the only other limitation then in the text is that if the intended victim sees, hears, or is warned of the thief's approach, the thief's attack is not a backstab. Well, there's no one here to warn of the thief's approach. Alexander's comrades are definitely not going to warn the berserker. And as a move silently ability check is not required, unless it's outside of battle, then I can only presume that Alexander is able to quite easily sneak up behind the berserker without making a sound. So on that note, Alexander is going to get a +4 to his attack roll against the berserker. Unfortunately, he does get a -1 to hit and -1 to his damage rolls as well, because he only has a 7 strength. But with his bonus, he only needs a 9 on the d20, so here goes. And he rolled a 17. So he gets to do 2d4 -1 damage. And this is against the 5 remaining hit points that the berserker has. So here goes the roll. 7 damage. So this backstab absolutely obliterates the berserker. Alexander drives his dagger into the flat of the berserker's back, slaying mercilessly, bringing the encounter to a close. So the question now is, do these berserkers have any treasure? They are treasure type P for treasure carried, so they will have 3d8 copper, and that's it. I don't even care to take the copper, to be honest with you. But I do have one question I'd like to know. Do these berserkers have any food or water on them? And thinking logically, if they are not near their lair, which I've ruled out they weren't, then they should have some supplies. I don't even think it's necessary to roll to determine this. It's so unlikely that they would be venturing through Radleb Woods without food and water. The question is, how much food and water do they have? And I guess they're probably going to have up to a week of rations each, possibly a few weeks of rations. So I think what I'm going to do is roll a d20, and the result is how many days of rations they are carrying for a single person. So here's the roll. So they have 12 days of food, and sharing that out between 4 characters, that's just 3 days of food per person. But this means that they can continue their journey without having to worry about taking any penalties for being hungry. So night has fallen. The party have finished travelling for the day. They've barely made it back into the denser part of the forest after they accidentally found their way into the grasslands trying to escape the young red dragon. So they're sat round the campfire. Now I'm going to roll to see if they have a nighttime encounter. So there is a 2 in 12 chance that they will. And with a result of an 8, they pass peacefully through the night. So they awake on the 11th day of Felmont and are ready to continue on their journey to Alabast. But I'm going to leave that there and I'm going to address what's going on with Ilyena and Yolanda's party. On the 10th day of Felmont, Yolanda, Ilyena and Cathbad are trying to move south through the dense forest towards the safety of Alabast. They are still about a day and a half away. Will they become lost? They have a 2 in 6 chance. The dice dictate that they are indeed lost. I'm going to roll a d6 to determine the course of travel. And on a 3, they move south-east. So they are heading towards the south edge of the forest and will emerge on this trajectory just 1 hex northeast of where they are trying to get to. Do they have a daytime encounter? There is a 2 in 6 chance. They do. The encounter will be with a dragon. Again, different party, but it's still a dragon. Could it be the same dragon, potentially? I'm going to say, before I roll, that there is a 50% chance that this is the same young red dragon that Claudius and his friends encountered. And an 84 means no, that's not the case. So I'm going to determine the encounter randomly on the dragon subtable. So a d12 will determine the outcome. And a 9 is a hydra. So a hydra is a large creature with a dragon-like body and up to 12 snake-like heads. So only one of these hydras appears. The party are going to try and evade it straight away. But first I need to determine the details of the encounter. So we'll go to surprise. And the party are surprised. So this encounter is going to take place at 1d4 times 10 yards. So 10 yards it is. So the best way that I can describe the circumstances of this encounter is that as the party are nearing the edge of the forest, they hit a rocky part of it and they get too close to a hidden cave mouth that's hidden by trees and vegetation. And as they pass by within close proximity, they suddenly hear a loud rumble and the ground vibrates, the trees shake, and suddenly this hydra with 9 heads comes bursting out of this concealed cave mouth, and before they can even react, it's within 10 yards of them. But how will this hydra react to the party? And a 7 means that it is immediately cautious as soon as it sees them. So it delays. It's made itself known. It's trying to scare the party into moving away from it. So the party are naturally going to try and evade while they have the chance, and they have a 50% chance to do this successfully. And with a 74, they fail. So the Hydra will make a morale check here to see if it decides to pursue. As the Hydra made a cautious reaction roll, it was uncertain. It was just attempting to scare the party away. I'm going to roll a morale check, but I'm going to rule that if the Hydra rolls 9 or above on the morale check, then it will not pursue. Normally it would need an 11, but I'm going to knock that down by 3. And it rolls a 7, so it will pursue. This is not good. This is really not good. So the Hydra is not an intelligent being, so the party are going to try and drop rations as they run away to see if they can entice the Hydra to stop and eat the food. So Yolanda throws down 3 days of standard rations. Is this going to work? There will be a 3 in 6 chance. Yes, it works. So the party are able to escape the Hydra. So they regain their bearings and they continue until nightfall. So they set up camp on the edge of Radleb Wood. Will they have a nighttime encounter? There is a 2 in 12 chance. And luckily with a 3, they do not. So they manage to get a restful night's sleep, ready to continue in the morning. So the next morning, they emerge into a clearing. It's still very much littered with trees, but they are out of the densest part of the wood and they're on the edge of the wood. From this vantage point, there is a good chance that they will be able to see Alabast. The party were expecting to emerge from the forest into less dense land. So there's nothing obvious that would sort of dictate that they have gone wrong. So I think what I'm going to do is roll a normal check to see if they are lost. And on a 3, they're not. So they're not going to go in a random direction, but they're going to continue in the same trajectory. And will they have an encounter in the daytime? Yes, indeed, they will. So I've progressed the party southeast a bit further. So at this point, they are 16 miles to the east of Alabast. And I think what I'm going to do is use an oracle to determine whether they can see Alabast from their current vantage point. And let's say this is absolutely a 50-50 chance. And with a 41, the answer is yes. So they can see Alabast directly to the west of them, but they are currently 2 days away. They can travel a little bit faster now they're on more of a clear type of terrain. Let's figure out first what they've encountered. It's currently the 11th of Felmont. So a 4 on the d8 means that they have encountered animals. And a 1 on the d12 means that they have encountered a animal herd. So this is this is brilliant news. This is absolutely brilliant news. I'm going to make a quick roll to determine what type of animals they've encountered. So I'm going to roll a d10 because there are 10 examples in the rule cyclopedia under the animal herd stat block in the monster list. And with an 8, we have elk. So there are elk grazing on these wooded grasslands, which is so much more wholesome than the experience the party has had over the last several days. So they're just going to take a straight shot now and try and make it west to Alabast. It's going to take them 2 days. Will they have a nighttime encounter? I'm not going to roll to see if they are lost because they can see where they're going now. So on the nighttime, they don't have an encounter. So we go to the 12th day of Felmont. Do they have a daytime encounter? The answer's no. So the next day, do they have a daytime encounter in the morning? They do. So we're on the 13th of Felmont now, and they are almost arriving in Alabast. They do have another encounter. So looking at the wilderness encounters table now for grasslands, I'm going to roll a d8. And on a 7, we have a dragon again. The third time I've rolled dragon. So d12 on the dragon subtable. 9. A hydra. It's surely the same hydra. I'm going to say there's an 80% chance that it's the same hydra. So on a 9, it's definitely the same hydra. So it is following the party's scent because they've given it food. It's now been stalking them. Can they lose it? Let's find out. So let's roll for surprise. The party are surprised again. So let's see how this hydra is going to react. A 12 means friendly. So the fact that they have given this hydra food, it has followed them and it wants more food, but it doesn't wish harm on the party. It just thinks that they're going to feed it again. So what do the party do? I guess they're going to leave more rations. So Cathbad is going to sacrifice the remaining food that he has on him as well. And I'm going to say that with the monster being friendly, the Hydra, that it's going to take its reward and it's happy. And the party are going to continue their journey. But they have one more night to camp and get through. Do they have a nighttime encounter? A 1 on the d12, so they do. They're going to have another encounter, but this time at nighttime. So let's find out what they have come across this time. An 8 is insect. So let's go to the insect subtable. And a d12 is a 5, which is tiger beetle. Let's have a look at the surprise rolls. The party are surprised, which does not come as a surprise. So encounter distance will be 1d4 times 10 yards. So 20 yards. And the tiger beetle's reaction is going to be a 7, which is caution. There are 6 of them altogether, and these beetles are about 4 feet long. The party are sat around the campfire, and Yolanda is currently on watch, and as she is on watch, she sees 6 beetles come into the light of the campfire, cautiously, fearful of the flames. It's time for the party to roll their initiative. But that's all I have time for in this episode of Tales of Mystara. Please join me next time to find out what happens next. Have a great week, everyone. And I'll see you in the next session.